This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
Welcome to another in the Exchange's 2016 Conversations with the Candidates series. I'm Laura Kanoy, along with Josh Rogers. Our series continues today with U.S. Republican Senator Kelly Ayotte. We spoke with her Democratic challenger, Governor Maggie Hassan, earlier this month. This hour, Josh and I will ask Senator Ayotte about some of the top issues in this race. We'll also present questions from our listeners received in advance on social media. And we'll hear from our audience here at NHPR, including members of the Concord, Keene, and Manchester Young Professionals Networks. We're also streaming on Facebook Live, so welcome everyone and welcome Senator Ayotte.
It's great to be here, Laura. Thank you. Thanks, Josh.
Well, and Senator Ayotte, let's start with the big news over the weekend, the emails and the decision by FBI Director James Comey to notify Congress that there are more emails that might be relevant to the investigation of Hillary Clinton's use of a private server while Secretary of State. What do you make of this, Senator Ayotte?
Well, obviously significant in the fact that the FBI director thought it was important enough to make the notification to Congress that these emails could be relevant to the investigation into Secretary Clinton and her private server, and obviously, most importantly, the issue of classified information and how it impacts national security. So I think it's a, you know, this is something that obviously the FBI, having been a prosecutor myself, it's the, you know, the whole case itself has been unusual in the sense that Director Comey, you know, the way he announced up front after he conducted his original investigation that, in fact, you know, he would also make the prosecutorial decision. That was very unusual. That's not something that I'm used to as a former prosecutor. So I think this issue is one, you know, obviously needs to be fully investigated and handled hopefully as quickly as possible. That's important. And but it also is one that is, if it's about national security and about how classified information is handled, it should be carefully examined. So it was, I think, obviously surprising to many of us.
And drawing on your time as an attorney general, as the state's top
yes.
prosecutor, there are lots of questions, as you know, Senator Ayotte, about Mr. Comey's actions. Procedurally, he himself said the FBI cannot yet assess whether the material may be significant, how long it will take to figure that out. Meanwhile, there's a bipartisan open letter from about 100 former top justice officials criticizing Director Comey's decision, saying he should exercise heightened restraint near the time of a primary general election, that should be the policy.
One of the things,
was he restrained enough?
Well, one of the things as I look at, I mean, I when he came out with his original findings in the investigation in terms of finding that there was no reasonable prosecutor that would be bring a case, you know, I disagreed with the way that was handled because that was very unusual. Having been a prosecutor myself, normally the investigators conduct the investigation and then it would be referred to the prosecutors to determine whether there's probable cause. So I at the time said that I thought there were a different set of standards being applied to this case. However, I will say that when new information comes forward as an investigative official, you can't ignore it. So I in his position, were he to ignore it, that would be as problematic as to, you know, where we are now. So I think he, with new information, you have to follow a case where it goes and make sure that any new information that comes in is looked at to make sure that there's no, you know, criminal matters involved. And especially if we don't know yet, but if it involves any kind of national security information, it has to be looked at. I don't see a choice of looking at it at this point because otherwise you'd be ignoring something that could be important.
This is the only choice he could
and you
have
can't
made
do that as an you can't do that as a law enforcement official. He has to enforce the laws, and he has to look at it. Again, I haven't agreed fully with the way he's handled this because I thought it was unusual in the first instance for him to make both the investigative and the prosecutorial decision. I've never been in a case like that myself, especially when it's involving a felony or a more significant crime. And, you know,
Josh, yeah.
Well, but procedure aside, I mean, the politics of this are interesting for, you know, Republicans. This development is seen by many as kind of a shot in the arm. Your campaign jumped on this, put up a digital ad this morning tying Governor Hassan to Secretary Clinton on the question of Clinton's trustworthiness. Given that Director Comey says we don't know whether this the new information may be relevant, is that exploiting a situation where we don't know the facts?
No, one of the things that I think, you know, Governor Hassan in this race has, in terms of how Secretary Clinton handled her private server and the nature of, we know, classified information on it, you know, she really has not, I think, handled that strongly enough and called out Secretary Clinton strong enough. And so most recently to have this new information come forward, again, I thought that the way that she made a statement on it was very understated in terms of recognizing the significance of the having a private server, handling national security information. I mean, this whole thing is very important in terms of how we handle classified information. So I think that, you know, Governor Hassan has not stood up and really called this out in terms of how Secretary Clinton has handled this matter in general.
I'm going to jump back in, Josh, on the politics of this. I do wonder about some of the polling, Senator Ayotte, showing that this helps Republicans. Do you think that this is going to help your race here in New Hampshire?
Now, I think this race is about the issues in the Senate race. It's about, you know, who's going to, you know, be that strong independent voice for people in New Hampshire on the issues, whether that we're addressing, whether it's the heroin epidemic, whether, you know, how do we make sure that we have good paying jobs and opportunities in this state, and also health care costs. And that, so all those issues to me are the issues that this race is about. And I think, you know, certainly the national issues are, you know, we're asked about it, they come into play. But ultimately, this is about New Hampshire and who's going to be New Hampshire's voice in the Senate. So I think that's the foremost issues in this race.
Well, we've got a good audience here who wants to ask you about some of those issues. So let's go to them. I want to thank everybody for turning out today. And go ahead, next person in the audience, give us your name, please, and ask your question.
My name is Jariel, and I live in Keene. I'm a student and work here in Concord. Senator Kelly Ayotte, one of the things that I'm like worried as a grad student when I'm going back to the workforce is that I look into the family friendly and work flexibility act. And even if I give up overtime, pay for comp, and I might not be able to take it when I need it, I feel that I need like a crystal ball to try to think and see ahead and anticipate an unexpected illness or injury to have time in advance. Wouldn't a straight up paid family leave and medical leave like Senator Gillibrand's Family Act be better?
Thank you so much for the question.
Thank you for the question. I appreciate it. This is really important. You know, I have two children, 9-year-old, 12-year-old, and I know that for many families, obviously, working and being able to have the opportunity to raise your children, this is a big, important issue and a challenge. So What I have supported is making sure that we have, for example, expanding flexible spending accounts for childcare, and making sure I've introduced a bill to actually double those spending accounts and the ability to put on a tax-free basis money aside for that purpose, and also for childcare and other needs, and also encouraging employers to support those efforts. In addition to that, a tax credit that I've supported to encourage employers the incentive to make sure that they have more paid leave for their employees, and then flexibility in the workplace. The bill that you referenced is one right now in the public sector. If an employee chooses to make an agreement with his or her employer that they want flex time instead of overtime, they can do that. And it's solely on the basis of what the employee wants to do. So the employer can never ask an employee to make that decision. In the private sector, they do not have that flexibility to do that. And so what my bill would do is allow more flexibility in terms of the agreements that the employee wants to make with his or her employer. But the employee would be in the driver's seat. And that's important because we want to make sure, whether it's more flexibility, encouraging more paid leave, more family-friendly policies, that it's the employee that has the opportunity to craft the best agreement with their employer. Finally, one other issue that I think is important as well is thinking about making sure that in terms of our policies in the workplace, Senator Shaheen and I have partnered together on a bill to address pregnancy discrimination, because there was a case that went to the U.S. Supreme Court that really made it very kind of muddy in terms of what the rights were of pregnant workers. And so she and I have introduced a bipartisan bill to address that issue as well. And so I think we need some more clarity there.
So, Senator Jadeel, thank you for the question very
thank
much.
You.
And towards the end, he said, you know, look, wouldn't straight up paid family leave be easier? You know, your bill seems to, you can craft it this way, you can craft it that way. Maybe your employer says this, maybe you say that, maybe you take some, you know, you patch it up with
well,
some
I think what I've
comp
intru-
time.
He right.
Seems
what
to be
I think what I've introduced
is, the other way.
Is a way to really forge a bipartisan way forward on this, because, you know, paid family leave is important and we need to find ways to work together on it. But we also have to make sure that we can figure out how to pay for it and afford it. And I think that the bipartisan legislation that I've been supporting is a way that we can find some common ground and improve the amount of paid leave, the flexibility, and more family-friendly workplace, which I think we all need and want if we're going to include everyone in the workforce and give everyone an opportunity.
So
Josh,
do you believe just straight-up paid family leave would be kind of a non-starter among Republicans? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know that it's a non-starter, but I would not want to understand how we would pay for it. That's important, and how we would afford it, because we have a lot of other challenges that we need to address, including making sure that Social Security and Medicare remain strong. And so we have to, and that's really important to families as well, and obviously for those heading into retirement, but the disabled community. And so we've got other challenges. We need to make sure that we're looking at everything as we think about what's the way to keep people in a strong position.
Senator Ayotte, I want to ask you about the economy. When President Obama came into office, the country was in deep recession. Now the Census Bureau reports the largest drop in the U.S. poverty rate and the largest increase in median income in decades. Meanwhile, the U.S. economy expanded almost 3% last quarter. Does the president deserve some credit for this economic improvement?
Well, I think that certainly, you know, we're glad to see the most recent economic report. But one challenge that we face is that we also have a very low labor participation rate. So we have a number of people that have dropped out of the workforce. So the numbers are important, and I'm glad to see them improve. And certainly everyone working on this issue deserves some credit. But I think that we can look at the numbers and understand that we can work toward an even stronger economy to make sure that people who have dropped out of the workforce, perhaps they've gotten discouraged, that they can get back in the workforce, whether that's focusing on the right kind of training, if they need additional training, whether that's making sure, from my perspective, that we have a better tax code. I'd like to see us reform our tax code so that we can keep jobs here in the United States, and I think we need to do that to improve our economy. And finally, in addition to that, I think healthcare costs, you know, a lot of families are struggling with higher healthcare costs. So those are areas where I think we have a lot more to go on and working together that can make our economy stronger.
Well, and I've got a question that came in earlier today on healthcare that I'll ask you in a minute. But we have another person in our audience that wants to join us. So go ahead, please give us your name and ask your question. Thanks for being here.
Gretchen. What skills, training, and experience have you found to be valuable as a U.S. senator? And since she has tried to define you so much, what skills, training, and experience do you think Maggie has that might be valuable to her?
Thank you.
Well, certainly, you know, I think obviously I'm sure that Governor Hassan has talked about her prior service and as a state senator and then also as governor, which I certainly appreciate. My experience has been one where I've been attorney general before I served in the Senate. And that experience is I was originally appointed the first woman attorney general, but also originally appointed by a Republican governor, but twice reappointed by a Democratic governor. So I certainly have a strong history of being able to work with both sides. And I've taken that into the Senate. And my experience in the Senate my first term is one where I've gotten the opportunity to I chair the Readiness Subcommittee on the Armed Services Committee. I also chair in the Commerce Committee the Aviation Subcommittee for the entire nation. And I have one of the most bipartisan records. So I've demonstrated that I have an ability to work across the aisle and to get things done, like the Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act that we worked on to help our heroin epidemic. And I've also worked not only across the aisle with from other states, but also with Senator Shaheen on a number of matters that are significant to the state of New Hampshire. So that experience, I think, is one when we look at what's happening in our nation's capital. I focus on delivering results and getting things done. But I think one thing that will be a contrast in this race between Governor Hassan and I is if you look at even the Oval Office, I will stand up, even if it's my own party. I will stand up. I did that, for example, when members of my own party wanted to shut down the government. I will stand up on behalf of the people of New Hampshire and what's right. And so no matter what side it comes from, if we can find common ground, I'm going to look for it to get things done. But even if it's something I don't agree with, I will stand up and be quite clear about that. And I think that's the kind of independent, strong voice we need if we're going to get things done and really make sure that we're moving forward in the country.
Senator Ayotte, speaking of standing up to your own party, recently Senator Ted Cruz said that Republicans could seek to block a Democratic president from filling a vacant Supreme Court seat indefinitely. Is that something you would support? You know, you talked about sort of going against Cruz when he tried to shut down the government.
No, I would not support that. I've said that clearly this election has very significant implications for the country, and that obviously we have a vacant Supreme Court position right now that the people are going to weigh in by whom they elect as president in November, and that then we have to go forward with that confirmation process. So, and obviously I will carefully vet whoever is proposed and make sure that they're not only qualified, but I'll want to understand their constitutional philosophy. But I would not support the proposal to permanently block filling that court.
I did get a question last week on social media. Why has President Obama's nominee for the Supreme Court not gotten hearings yet? And this person says, what has been your role to date in either pushing to have hearings or preventing them from taking place? And I want to thank that person for contributing.
Thank you. So as I've said, so we're in a 4-4 court situation with Justice Scalia passing away. And this is one where my position has been, you know, heading into a presidential election with the balance of the court at stake, that the people of this country should weigh in terms of who will nominate the next justice. We are, you know, 8 or 9 days before this election, and the people will weigh in, and then we'll go forward based on the next president who is elected and what that individual, whoever they nominate, and so at that point, we will go forward with the vetting process. To me, it's really important. We are in a balance that will matter in terms of people's constitutional rights and what's at stake, and it will also matter in terms of the shift of this court one way or the other in terms of how they interpret people's constitutional rights.
So he died in February, didn't he, Justice Scalia? I mean, that's
so.
Almost a year before the next election, so one could say President Obama is the president, he should get the chance.
President Obama is the president, and under the Constitution, the president nominates, and the Senate has advice and consent. And so there are two separate rules there. And I believe it's important that the people weigh. By the way, I also happen to have a record of I've confirmed many of the president's nominees to the judiciary, but also to his cabinet. So a very strong record of, you know, working to fill positions.
We'll pick that
this
up after
one
break.
Is very important in terms of.
I apologize for interrupting.
Yes.
Stay with us. Welcome back to The Exchange and our Conversations with the Candidates series. I'm Laura Kanoy, along with Josh Rogers. Our guest is U.S. Senator Kelly Ayotte, a first-term Republican running for re-election. We're also taking questions from our audience, including members of the Concord, Manchester, and Keene Young Professionals Networks, as well as those submitted in advance on social media. And Josh, let's start off with a question from you, please.
Sure. To the extent that nuclear threats have been discussed in this election, it's been largely about Iran. I want to ask you about North Korea. Mm-hmm. plenty of national security experts say its nuclear and missile programs have improved to the point where it can threaten the United States directly. Mm-hmm. Where do you put North Korea on the list of national security threats?
North Korea is a very significant threat. We know that they've developed what's called a Rogue Mobile ICBM. And so what the significance of that is intercontinental ballistic missile that could have the possibility of hitting our country. And then it's mobile, which is harder for us in terms of our intelligence and detection. We also know that they've done testing. We know that the leader of North Korea appears to be quite unstable, and that's deeply problematic. We voted in the Congress to extend sanctions legislation to President Obama to give him that authority. I think we could take some stronger steps there than he has. I also believe that China has a very instrumental role in the behavior of North Korea, and that us pressuring China as well in terms of how North Korea is handling its nuclear program, because North Korea is very tied to China economically. And that's another pressure point where we need to ask China to step up more strongly. But I worry about the North Korean threat. And also, there's been reports of cooperation between North Korea and Iran on their ballistic missile program. And this is of concern, because we know that Iran is also testing ballistic missiles and trying to develop intercontinental ballistic missile capability. This is something that I've also introduced legislation on in the Senate, because I do not think the administration has been strong enough in dealing with Iran's ballistic missile program.
But as far as the sanctions that you believe could be more stringent, what would you prefer?
I think that we gave the president sanctions authority, that he could pursue those economic sanctions more aggressively, but also China has to be a part of this if we really want to have an impact on North Korea. So I would like the administration also to push China harder to pressure North Korea in terms of its behavior on its nuclear program and its missile program.
And how to do that?
I think that we have leverage with China economically. They do on us as well. But if we don't pressure them and go to them and say, you know, we could use some of our economic leverage with China as well. And also some of the work that China is doing, unfortunately, toward its neighbor in that region that has been aggressive territorially. This is important that we also continue to have a strong naval presence in that area. So this is a diplomatic issue. This is making sure that we remain militarily strong. But if we don't pursue it, we're going to see North Korea continue to act in aggressive ways that are of concern to not just us, but the world.
Well, speaking of aggressive actors on the world stage, there's growing concern, as you know, Senator Ayotte, about Russian aggression, hacking into Democratic Party emails, backing the Assad regime in Syria. You serve on Senate Armed Services Committee and Homeland Security. What do you think our options are here in terms of dealing with what seems to be an increasingly aggressive Russia?
So this is another example. It's really important that America lead on these issues. And going back to the reset policy with Russia, which actually Secretary Clinton was really a big part of and leader when she was Secretary of State, that has failed under this administration, because you've seen Russia continuously push, whether on violations of what's called the INF Treaty, in terms of dealing with its nuclear missile program, in terms of its invasion of Ukraine. And in each of those instances, we have not responded so aggressively, in my view. So, for example, in Ukraine, we could have provided defensive weapons to the people that were defending their own sovereign territory, not us. We weren't sending troops there. We did not take that. And that was against the advice of many of our military leaders who thought that was a good move. Thought
so
it could
have
be
sent arms
move.
To
I think that would have been
Crimea?
People who, not even just Crimea, they invaded and essentially took Crimea. But in the remainder of Ukraine, there's conflict in the areas that are bordering Crimea, that people are trying to defend their own sovereignty. So with Russia, we have to be much stronger than we have. Otherwise, we see also Russia, for example, providing to Iran the S-300 system that would allow it to be able to have a system that would be very difficult if we ever had to take any action against Iran for our Air Force to be able to address. We could, but it's much more difficult. We didn't want them to do that. We also know that they are actually undermining our efforts right now in Syria because they are, in fact, bombing people we are hoping we can work with and that are more moderate forces that we are trying to help push back against ISIS and also, you know, obviously help to the people who are struggling. And it's a horrible human. So my view on Russia is we needed to take a much stronger position on Russia early on when we quickly understood that the reset policy was not going to work. And so we've continued to see a pattern of bad behavior. One final point. We can also push our NATO allies to take so Germany has recently been thinking about imposing sanctions, economic sanctions on Russia for some of its bad behavior in Syria that's undermining, you know, what we're trying to do there against ISIS. And so I think we should urge them to do that and collectively call on NATO more to form together in terms of addressing what has been very bad aggressive behavior by Russia.
And NATO is bolstering its defenses in Eastern and
Central
Europe.
Yes, and I support that. And I think we could do more of that as well, and that's important.
You know, very quickly, Senator Ayotte, we've had a lot of these conversations with the candidates this year
yes.
from New Hampshire, and one area where I feel like I've gotten a different response from everybody is just how comfortable are you with the notion of sending in actual military forces in Syria? I mean, I know we're doing some work in Iraq, advising and so forth, but what's your comfort level with actual troops on the ground in that Syrian conflict or expanding our footprint in Iraq?
I think it's really important for people to know that right now we have almost 5,000 troops that are actually in, whether they're, you know, special forces or others who are there now in Iraq. And we're also dropping, we have our men and women in uniform in the Air Force and other branches who are flying combat missions, and they're in combat as well. So it's important to understand that. And I do not believe that we need to, nor should we, send a ground force in there, a traditional ground force. But we have folks that are there now, and we need to make sure that they have the rules of engagement to be able to not only take out ISIS, but protect themselves. We need to make sure that the airstrikes that are being taken, that same rules apply in terms of having force protection for our folks and also allowing the rules of engagement to take out the enemy. And we also should be calling on, I think, for a greater role. We have NATO nations who are also working with us there, but NATO itself could take a stronger role than it has, and also the Arab nations can take a stronger role. But I don't think that a full, you know, a ground force should be put there in the traditional sense that we think about it. We need to understand there are ground forces there.
Sure.
And our special forces who are there, we need to understand they are in combat and we need to support them and make sure that we don't put them in situations where they don't have enough force structure to be able to protect themselves.
Okay. Josh, back to you.
Sure. Let's turn to guns. It's been a big issue this campaign season. Why don't we take a listen to what you said during a recent debate on NH1?
I support background checks. I want to get the mental health records that have not been put in that are supposed to be there by law. New Hampshire's finally doing that, but has been late to do that. In addition to that, if you're too dangerous to get on a commercial flight, to not be able to immediately purchase a firearm, but also, if you think you're wrongfully on that list, I've supported a bipartisan effort to ensure there's a judicial mechanism to be able to get off the list. We have to focus on making sure that people are safe, but we also have to protect people's constitutional rights.
Okay, there's a lot going on in that clip. Why don't we start with background checks? You say you support them. Does that include all types of gun sales, including private sales and online or those that take place at gun shows?
I do support background checks. And what I think is you're probably asking me about proposals that I've not supported that I didn't think would be effective, but I'm open to making sure that we address this and have a strong background check system. But we have to understand that we have some gaps in this system right now that are very apparent and obvious gaps, including, I think I referenced in that answer, the records of those who are adjudicated a danger to themselves and others under current law. And then we even see in New Hampshire recently that, in fact, enough resources to make sure that the system can function to ensure that the background checks are done in a timely way. There have been some recent issues that have come up in terms of the state police needing more resources to do that here in New Hampshire, and then prosecutions of the system, which to me, as I looked at, I looked very carefully at the record of that, and there are very few prosecutions being brought of the actual background check system. And without a prosecution, you can have any system, but if it's not enforced, you aren't going to actually get prevent bad behavior. And I think we also have to recognize that if you look at this, a majority of criminals actually don't get their firearms through that system. They're obviously getting them through other ways, whether stealing them and the studies that have been looked at it. So we have to address that piece as well.
But so in terms of you mentioned that New Hampshire had been late to share some mental health records with the federal
background. New Hampshire's not alone, but New Hampshire's one of the states, yes.
And so you support that. This has obviously been going on for some time. When you worked in state government, I just don't recall anyone talking about that much back then. When you were Attorney General, was this something that you were concerned about?
One of the issues I was concerned about as Attorney General was the sharing across state lines of this information. In fact, I remember because what goes in the NICS system is important, and at some point we had issues in terms of Massachusetts sharing with us and other states. So that was an issue I did work on as Attorney General. This issue did not come to the forefront at the time, but I've been very clear on this for years that getting those records in is important. And I know that the state is, I think, finally doing that, but we've been very late to get those records in New Hampshire.
But in terms of creating a hierarchy, you obviously point to what you see as deficiencies on any number of levels in terms of the need to tighten existing law. In terms of expanding background checks, mm-hmm. I mean, you obviously, you know, people criticize you. They say you're not for so-called universal background checks, gun control types. You know, is that a fair criticism, or you're saying you'd be open to?
I'm open to it. I want to make sure that whatever we do is a system that will work effectively in how it's administered in the state level within the NICS system. I want to make sure it's enforced, and I also want to make sure that we do protect people's constitutional rights. One thing we don't want is a registry type situation, and I wouldn't support that.
And as far as increased resources for ATF. Federal entities that it's, you know, their statistics suggest that there's a backlog. I mean, it's hard to.
Well, there is. And I've actually voted for, to basically increase prosecutorial resources. The legislation I voted for would create a special task force just focused on prosecution of violations of the background check system. And there was a similar type in the Bush administration, like called Project Safe Neighborhoods, where they were focusing on gun crime. So that would mean more prosecutorial resources to address this.
Okay. And Senator Ayotte, this email came in just this morning on the issue of health care, which you referenced earlier. This person asks, Charlotte asks, with the United States spending almost twice as much for health care and as other advanced nations and ranked worst in effectiveness, what is your plan, Charlotte asks, for addressing the cost of health services and pharmaceuticals? Thank you, Charlotte, for the question. It's been a big issue in the campaign.
No, I mean, this is a very significant issue because, what I'm hearing from people in New Hampshire is that they're facing higher deductibles and higher copays and sometimes higher premiums. So what that means is that if you're an average family and you do get a raise at work, that goes right into those deductibles and you can't afford it. This is one where I think there are two areas where we do have agreement. Number one, I don't think we should go backwards on pre-existing conditions. We should address those. And number two, the people who have gotten coverage under Medicaid expansion, I don't want to pull the rug from them. I want to make sure I voted to extend it for 2 years so that we can come up with, I hope, more flexibility and state-based solutions to give states more flexibility on how they would serve that population. But in terms of costs, right now we're dealing with one size fits all from Washington. They, you know, essentially under the healthcare law, you say you have to have a certain kind of plan. So what has happened is that people who had plans that they liked before were unable to keep them. And I'll give you an example. I met a young man at the Olive Garden who's the cook. had a plan he paid $20 a week for before. And now, under the Affordable Care Act, the prices have gone up. So he's just deciding not to have coverage and is going to pay for the fine. So I would like more choice in terms of the kinds of plans people have options for, more transparency in the healthcare system of how much things cost. I've voted and have legislation to expand health savings accounts and also allow you to carry the money forward longer so you can use them. Those kind of accounts actually got reduced under the Affordable Care Act in terms of what they can be used for. And then competition across state lines for insurance companies, which I think is important. And then I also think we need to restore the 40-hour work week that the Affordable Care Act actually changed it to 30. And I've heard a lot of kind of unintended consequences from that of workers who had their hours changed as a result. And I think there's bipartisan legislation to do that. So I think there are a number of areas, but if we stay where we are, we're going to be paying more for health care. And that to me is unaffordable for so many families who are working hard in the state. And that's an issue I hope we can address.
And the mantra 2 years ago from Republicans about the Affordable Care Act was repeal and replace. Is that where you're at, Senator Ayotte?
Well, I have voted to repeal and replace, and you know, but I think we're in a position where I've also focused on where can we find make changes that need to be made in common ground. And if you look, no matter what happens in this election, I think we're going to have mixed government, and so that means that we're going to have to be in a position where we actually look at these issues, take up some very significant needed changes, and I hope it goes in the direction of more competition, more choice, really looking at how we drive down costs, because I don't see this as sustainable as it is. And I think you see it, the healthcare law in many states.
Although New Hampshire's increase is just 2%.
Yeah, so it's between 2% and 30%, depending on what kind of plan you have. So I can tell you that some experiencing lower, but many who I've met are experiencing higher as well in small businesses also.
I wanted to ask you about the Medicaid expansion. This has come up in a lot of the debates and conversations this election year. And you just said you don't want to pull the rug out from under people. You want to take 2 years to craft a New Hampshire solution. But Medicaid expansion here was a product of Republicans and Democrats, led by Republicans in the state Senate, proudly touted this as a New Hampshire solution. So I'm just wondering what could be more New Hampshire-y?
Well, I will tell you this, that there are certain rules that they have to follow that are set by Washington. So New Hampshire came together on this issue, but also I know there were other things they wanted to look at that they didn't feel they had the flexibility to do. So New Hampshire is not alone on this. I believe, you know, I voted to extend it because I want New Hampshire to be able to continue to have the flexibility to design it any way they think is best in terms of maximizing our ability to serve underserved populations that need the help. So I know that when that debate came up in the legislature, there were other things that wanted to be considered, but that you would have had to need a waiver from Washington to do, which we shouldn't have to seek a waiver. We should be able to be able to make these decisions on our own.
Coming up, we turn to climate change, immigration, and bipartisanship. Stay with us for more conversation with the candidates on The Exchange on NHPR. Welcome back to our Conversations with the Candidates series on The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy, along with Josh Rogers. Our guest is U.S. Senator Kelly Ayotte, a first-term Republican running for re-election. We're taking questions from our live audience, including members of the Concord, Manchester, and Keene Young Professionals Networks, as well as those submitted in advance on social media. And Josh, let's kick this segment off with a question from you, please.
Sure. Senator, you supported the immigration bill that cleared the Senate, stalled in the House. Why don't we take a listen to how you described it in our Business and Economy Forum last week.
The bipartisan bill that did pass the Senate that I supported really would address doubling the amount of fencing, border agents, and entry-exit system. 40% of the people who stay here actually extend a visa, and we don't have an entry-exit system, an E-Verify system that works for our employers.
All right, so stronger border controls, E-Verify for employers. Sure. But what about the roughly 12 million people who are now here illegally? What should be the approach as far as those folks go?
Well, first of all, I think the security issue is very important. That's why I talked about that in the debate, and also an entry-exit system. And enforcing our laws, I don't think we should have situations like sanctuary cities. And to me, that's important. But in terms of the people who are here, I think the priority is that the criminals, people who break our laws, they should be sent home. That should not be acceptable to us. And the people who are here, I don't see enough buses to bring everyone back. We need a time certain. One of the things the bill I did support said was a time certain, anyone here as of a certain date. If you're a criminal, you go back to the country. If you are willing to work, be part of this country, learn English, pay a fine, taxes, you get in the back of the line, not in front of anyone who's waiting diligently, many of whom who are going through a system they wait years for. And I think that is a system that would be one where I hope would make some sense. But I do believe strongly in the security piece. And I'd also like to see us reform our legal immigration system, because as you look at this, there are difficulties with that system, and we need to make sure we can all trace our roots as an immigrant, I'm sure most of us in this room. And it needs to be a system that is based on what do we need the United States of America to remain strong. We have many people who are educated at our best institutions, and giving them an opportunity to stay here and help us, and others who come here just wanting to work hard and help us grow our economy. So I think that system deserves reform as well as the illegal issue, which has to be addressed.
Well, when you signed on to this bill, you were one of the first people who were not directly involved in the drafting to get out in front of this. And, you know, did you foresee how problematic this was going to be within the Republican Party? Even people who are staunch advocates of so-called comprehensive immigration reform, even Senator Rubio, when he was running for president, it was like, well, we can't do it all at once. The first thing we need to do is secure the border, and then we can start the discussion again.
Well, I supported the legislation. I didn't think the legislation was perfect, but I think that it had the components of the border security and reforming the legal system, and also trying to come up with a logical way to address the people that were here now that was at least fair, and making sure that, you know, criminals go home, but then they're the people that want to work and be part, get in the back of the line. So to me, I'm someone who wants to solve problems, and this one is one that cries out for our really working together on. So yes, I took some heat sometimes with my own party of wanting to address this, but if we continue in the status quo, it's not good for the country. It's not good on security. It's not good in terms of economically, of making sure that we have a fair immigration system that helps us grow and strengthen our country. So that is why I believe that while certainly not everything I wanted was in that bill, it wasn't perfect, I want us to address this instead of staying in our political camps and really get this addressed for the security and prosperity of this nation.
Another immigration issue you've worked on is the H-1B visa program, which allows companies to bring in high-skilled foreign workers to fill jobs. A lot of New Hampshire companies say this help fills a gap in skilled labor here, but you know, some critics of this say it gets firms off the hook from training the local workforce. Is this a problem in your mind, and should the numbers on H-1B visas be revisited?
The H-1B visas last year were filled, I believe, in less than 3 days for the entire country. So there are a number of positions that are open of people, again, who come to our education institutions and some of our best and get degrees here, that I think that system should be looked at in terms of making sure that we can fill positions we have open. Now, Americans need to have their opportunity first, and that bill says clearly you have to try to fill with an American. And then the money that comes from the visa fees from that goes into our STEM education. We need to look at our own pipeline, especially in the STEM area. So I've focused on this issue both in when we rewrote the No Child Left Behind to give more local control. I focused on enhancing STEM education there on a bipartisan basis with actually Senator Gillibrand. I focused on it in terms of this visa issue of making sure resources also go into our STEM education to build our pipeline. And then I've also supported, for example, with working with Senator Shaheen, to allow more flexibility to get, for example, things like FIRST Robotics into all of our schools, so we continue to build that STEM pipeline. But we need to do both. And that's why I think this is one where, yes, American jobs first, let's improve our education system, but also there are folks that would help us grow our economy
but
now.
If, as you say, the allocations were filled within 3 days, should there be more of these issued if it was?
Well, what I've supported is increasing the cap based on our own economic conditions. So that's one of the areas where if those jobs can't be filled with Americans, then we can allow people who are educated here, most of them, to stay and help us grow our economy. But then if we don't address the shortcomings in our own education system, that's not going to help our young people make sure that they have the opportunity to have those jobs. So I think we have to do both.
Senator Ayotte, I want to switch gears and ask you about climate change and play for you a question left on my voicemail last week by a listener from the North Country in Randolph. His name was Gary, and let's hear Gary's question for you.
We had a dearth of snow up here in the North Country last winter that affected the businesses up here. Very little snowmobiling. And 2015 is the warmest year on record. It looks like 2016 is going to be breaking records again. And I think global warming should be part of this debate, particularly in regards to the future of this country.
And Gary, again, thank you for calling and leaving that question. What do you think, Senator Ayotte, how important is this to you in the U.S. Senate, especially given the very New Hampshire concerns that Gary raises about New Hampshire's winter tourism industry?
Well, I think New Hampshire's environment is and beautiful natural setting is part of who we are. It's not only our way of life, but also very important in terms of tourism, and especially as you think about the beautiful northern parts of our state. So I've been focusing on making sure that we protect New Hampshire's environment back to my time as Attorney General. I do believe that climate change is a very important issue. So I've supported, for example, the Clean Power Plan that I think New Hampshire is already on its way to meeting most of the goals in the Clean Power Plan with some of the state efforts that we've taken. And so this is an area where I hope to be really leading bipartisan efforts, not only to address climate change, but how do we make sure that we continue the best technology development when it comes to fossil fuels to, as we make sure we develop energy for our economy, we're protecting our environment at the same time. And that's the kind of efforts that I support and have been supporting in the Senate, including energy efficiency legislation that is important too. I think focusing on that is one that, I actually got a significant amendment passed in energy efficiency legislation focused on commercial buildings. So that's an area where I hope we have common ground too.
There's a lot of people who say that that's an untapped area
it
to
is.
Look at.
And it's also, you see, a lot of the return on the investment that both businesses and residentials can get from this. It's a win-win.
A lot of environmentalists, Senator Ayotte, say, and you mentioned fossil fuels, this is why I'm asking, that a carbon tax is really the way to get serious about our fossil fuel use and the resulting problems we see with climate change. What do you think? Carbon tax?
I wouldn't support a carbon tax. I think that would end up, especially for lower income folks and middle income folks, it could be an energy tax that would drive up prices. I have supported the Clean Power Plan because I think that those measures in it we're able to meet in a way that helps us address climate change. In a way that also doesn't infringe on making sure that our economy and folks can afford the heating that they're paying for. I'd like to see us invest more in research, too. I think the federal government could have an important role in. So some of the renewable challenges that we face, whether it's storage for solar, this is something that we could, I think, make sure that we continue to kind of incentivize and jumpstart the research on some of the challenges with renewable to make them more sustainable going forward for the country.
So battery storage and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, some of those challenges, if we could overcome them, would be pretty significant and everyone would benefit from it. And that's why it would be worthy of some federal research on it so that everyone could benefit and the country would benefit as a whole.
One more question for you on this, Senator Ayotte, and then I want to go back to our audience here. Back in 2010, when you first ran for U.S. Senate, you were asked in a debate, in the primary debate, if man-made global warming had been proven without a doubt. You said no. That was 6 years ago. Have you changed your mind?
I think I've clearly said that climate change is real. So, yes, that was 6 years ago. I studied this issue very carefully, and I wouldn't have supported some of the efforts like the Clean Power Plan if I didn't believe it was a significant and real issue.
Okay, great. Let's go back to our audience. Thank you so much for being here. Go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, I'm Pat from Concord. You've talked about the Supreme Court and the Affordable Care Act and a couple of others as issues that need bipartisan support. And could you be a little bit more specific around priorities for alleviating the gridlock that currently exists in Congress, no matter who becomes the president?
Yes, I think this is really important. I am, if you look at my record, I already am one of the most bipartisan senators in the whole Senate. And so my focus would be on really looking at the priorities that we have. I hope that no matter who wins in November, that we do take up things like tax reform that need to be done, because it cries out in terms of addressing keeping jobs here in the United States of America. We all want that, and we all want to make sure that people have better opportunities. I look at areas like STEM education and how do we improve as I travel around New Hampshire, the jobs that are open in manufacturing and technology, and making sure that our students have the right skill sets to take on those jobs. So I hope we could find common ground no matter who wins in November in the Oval Office on those issues. And I also think that we need to work together to strengthen and preserve Social Security and Medicare that are going into deficiency position if we don't work on a bipartisan basis to strengthen them. So I will look for that ground, and I've already done that because that's how we got the heroin legislation done that was passed, that was signed into law this summer by the president. I worked with Senator Sheen on energy efficiency legislation. I've worked, for example, we passed the first long-term highway bill, and, you know, I worked on that to support that. We helped make sure that doctors' rates wouldn't be cut for Medicare beneficiaries, and that was done on a bipartisan basis, which I supported and helped. So I'm going to look for those opportunities because I know we're not going to get anything done if we don't find common ground. And I will look to be a bridge builder, and I have good relationships and respect within my own party, but I have also built relationships across the aisle that I think will be important no matter what happens in November. We need to go forward on these issues and challenges that we face.
Josh, back to you.
Sure. Obviously, bipartisanship has been a focus for you this campaign. You know, I covered your campaign in 2010. There's a different time then, but your emphasis was often on your conservative credentials. I can recall spending a day lurking around trying to find out what you had eaten for breakfast with Sarah Palin, for instance. You know, is Kelly Ayotte in 2016 different from Kelly Ayotte in 2010?
No. First of all, Josh, I think you know that we were in the middle of a primary election campaign in 2010. But I also think, you know, you've seen my time back as Attorney General. I mean, I wouldn't have been appointed by a Republican and Democratic governors if I didn't have a long history of being able to work with both sides of the aisle. And I think you may recall, even in my own primary campaign, some of the criticism that came when I originally ran was because of some of the bipartisanship I had done as Attorney General. So this is certainly in my DNA, or I wouldn't have had the history that I do in terms of how I came into public service.
So you think your politics since you've been in the Senate is all of a piece? Because certainly, you know, critics of you, Democrats, will make the argument that, you know, there's the record in the first part of your term and the record in the second part of your term. And you can point that, you know, to a lot of politicians facing reelection.
I think that that's just critics wanting to find ways, obviously, to really, I think, mislead about my record. Because go look at my record and go look on the environmental issues, for example. Go back to 2011 and you can see that I'm voting at that point in a way where I'm crossing the aisle to protect New Hampshire against Midwest power plants or mercury emissions and many other issues. So, you know, you can go back and look through my record and you'll see bipartisanship. You'll see people, by the way, you'll also see sometimes where my own party criticizes me for things I've done because I feel like we need to address them and move forward on them. And the other side, too. That's what happens when you kind of look for the way to bring people together. But I'm going to keep doing it because I know that that's how we're going to get things done. I mean, otherwise.
We're almost out of time, but I want to finish with a question about your favorite subject, Donald Trump. We know you're not voting.
How did
you know? We know you're not. Oh, I can see it in your eyes. We know you're not voting for him, and you're going to write in for Mike Pence. I don't need you to prove it for me with a ballot selfie, but I do want to know what you make of the fact that voters in your own party overwhelmingly elected Donald Trump, including here in New Hampshire, and you know what that says about the GOP these days.
I think that you know we obviously had a vigorous primary, many people running, and people weigh in on who they want to be our nominee. So that's the way the democratic process works, and I respect that. I think that, again, I don't know that it's a reflection on anything bigger other than people are frustrated with the status quo. I think we saw that also with Bernie Sanders' candidacy. And we need to address challenges that people are facing. And I think that that's an important message in all this. You know, better, the middle income folks are feeling crunched on healthcare, jobs, issues they want us to address. So I hope we will work together to do that because that's important to me.
And that wraps it up for our conversation with U.S. Senator Kelly Ayotte. Thanks to our listeners who submitted questions, to our live audience from the Concord, Manchester, and Keene Young Professionals Networks. Thanks also to our guest here on The Exchange, U.S. Senator Kelly Ayotte. Senator Ayotte, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me. Time flies.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.